attack, another had just gotten out of the hall or the hospital with a gallstone operation. Okay, now these people are on the street. Okay, and small encampments like what you talk about, we're not safe there. Okay, we need a place that's secure. Okay, small encampments scattered around were not secure. And I appreciate your opinion. However, the police have a very different opinion than yours, and we're subjected to it without lawful authority. Okay? People need a place to go. Very simple. Everybody wants to drink at home just like we all do, okay? Hey, come on. Let them go home and drink. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next three.
Next three. Doug Peterson, Pauline Gustafson, Rob Wheaton. They'll be followed by Elvis Argueta. I hope I have that name right. Thank you. Marvin Mitchell and Barry Joe Stahl.
Welcome to the City Council Chambers. Glad you're here. Go ahead. Hi.
Doug Peterson. Yes, my name is Doug Peterson. I own three convenience stores in downtown Portland, and we did sign the Vibrant Agreement. It was after multiple public hearings where we had a chance to testify. At first, they would not have allowed 12 ounce or anything over 12 ounces in size, so we couldn't carry the 16 ounce size Budweiser, Coors, Miller, and that represents about the 16 ounce size represents about 30% of the market. The very mainstream products, such as, like I say, Budweiser, Miller, Coors. The original one would not allow us to carry any of the or many of the microbrews, and they adjusted the so we could sell the 16 ounce size, we could sell the microbrews, and we could sell the 22 ounce sizes of the import beer, such as St. Pauli Girl, Heineken, and products that nature. And our market, we are targeting the visitors to Portland that are staying in the hotels, the downtown business people, downtown workers. And we have never carried, to start with, any of the problem alcohol, the Steel Reserve, the 32-ounce containers, the really mean stuff we've never carried. We've never carried fortified wine. So after the public hearings, the Vibrant Agreement looked okay for me to sign, and I signed it, and I was signed for three out of the nine stores that signed it. And I think as the last agreement, that works for me. A concern I have, I think we should be able to sell mainstream beer in 16-ounce containers because that's where a lot of the market is. And I brought in some wine here. This is a Duck Pond Chardonnay, 15% alcohol. And then this is a Duck Pond Merlot, and it's 14.5%. These would both be banned under this rule. Now, in this case, the alcohol content is quite visible on the bottle. Many times, you have to go down and really look in the fine print to find the alcohol content. And frankly, the distributors do not, you know, really track that. And so when you're talking to the salesman about ordering wine, he doesn't know what the percentage is on some of these. And it changes from year to year based on the vintage. And so you can get caught up and have this on your shelf and no intention of violating the law. So what I'm saying is take that Vibrant Agreement, the last one that was there, and establish that as the norm, and I don't think there'd be as much controversy. Thank you very much for your time.
Mr. Peterson, let me ask you about specifically that.
Sure.
Was there something in the Vibrant Agreement that's definition prohibited fortified wines but allowed wines with alcohol contents above 14%?
No.
I
think there should be fortified wine is what they're really targeting. And
right.
I have no problem with the restriction on that.
And these wines, are they locally produced?
These are locally produced in Oregon.
And are the price points on those generally above average?
Above $10.
Above $10. Okay, thank you.
And are they both naturally fermented, or are they fortified?
I don't believe they're fortified, but I'm not an expert.
Believe they're naturally fermented.
Yeah.
My turn, Mr. Mayor and council members. Thank you for listening to me. My name is Pauline Gustafson. I own a small grocery store in downtown. We have been there since 1965. You are being asked to petition for a ban of some alcohol to help change some bad habits of people. The petition from Teresa Marchetti was formulated and decided upon and then presented to the stores. We did not have any store input. She states that she had 67 meetings about this presentation, but we were only notified about 6 or 7 meetings. We could have been asked by the neighborhood involvement or neighborhood association to help come up with ideas such as a policy for clerks, perhaps naming some brands, etc., but we weren't. Online, there was a reference of 462 or so reports by the Business Alliance's Portland Patrol, but no store owners had access to these reports, and we have asked at every meeting to have the reports there to read, but there were none. Also asked the Portland Police representative to bring the arrest or citation reports, but he said it would be too costly and we would go and get them, we should go and get them ourselves. Although he brought them today, which is if he printed them back in February, he would have already had them and we would have all been able to check them out. So we store owners stand accused of creating problems, but no facts to back it up. 15 years ago, there were police reports of 1,200 citations, and I was given them, and I read through every single one of them, every single name, where the citation was issued, etc. 80 to 90% of those was hard liquor. Today, a pint of vodka can be bought for $3.95, and a fifth of vodka for $7. I called the Rose City Liquor Store and asked them. And many street people go and get their pints when they have money, and you can see them walking with the familiar twist on the sack that they are carrying. The 1,700 citations that the officer has stated breaks down to maybe 5 or 6 citations a day. And the 600 sober holds is probably 2 of them per day. In all of the 40 or 60 stores in downtown, oh gosh, I got 2 more pages to read. All meetings were in the evening, and a lot of store owners couldn't come because they would work. Instead, we had Teresa Marchetti come to the stores and ask us to sign their alcohol impact area ban. Her visit was intimidating to many store owners because they did not understand exactly what it meant. The first rendition of price fixing, which I believe is illegal, it took us 2 or 3 meetings for them to realize it was illegal, and they dropped it. I would think that they would have known this from the very start. Washington State University did an analysis of the alcohol impact areas in Washington, and they concluded that there was no real effect on chronic public inebriation. And I have the website, little stickers I can give you, so you can look it up online. The major final conclusion was spend the money for housing. It would be a better form of controlling homelessness who drink on the homeless who drink on the street, so they would have a place to go. Open cafes have publicly drunk people visible to others and to children, and we have seen on occasion people walking away with the glass in their hand or to go to the next driveway.
I'd let you go over 50 seconds. I need you to wrap up.
And I might be able to help you because I want to get you to your point, and you're losing us, quite frankly.
I'm nervous.
Is your point that if we can somehow distinguish between what have been identified as these problem beverages, which are malt liquor,
yes,
fortified wines, and distilled spirits, and we're more precise in our definitions, that would alleviate some of the concerns you have?
In Washington State, they actually name the brands.
I understand. We're not going to do that. So what I'm trying to get to, I'm trying to help you here. So listen to my question, and I'm trying to help you. If we're able to define and distinguish between wine that has content, for an example, of alcohol above 14% that occurs naturally, and, for instance, Thunderbird, which is fortified to achieve an alcohol content above 14%, does that resolve the issues that you're concerned about?
Partly.
And what is the other one?
The other is you should name the brands. And Teresa said, well, then they just bring in new brands. But OLCC has the right to say, no, we don't want that in Oregon. No, we don't want that in a populated area such as Portland. So they have the access to say, no, we're not going to let that in Portland. No, we're not going to let that in Portland.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out
and
is
that would be better for all the stores.
But if we were able to define it in a way that it didn't require us to name the brand, but we could capture it by definition so that if a new brand came on the market, doesn't that address your concern?
No, because category is like huge.
What do you sell?
We sell fine wines.
Okay.
We sell.
Let me finish the question.
Oh, sorry.
What do you sell that you're concerned about that if we define in the way I'm suggesting that we might, that might be prohibited?
Fine wines.
Well, then I need you to hear what I'm saying.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to,
okay,
please.
This wine here, for an example, is naturally fermented,
yes,
to the extent that it has an alcohol content above 14%, the way the rule is currently written that would prohibit that. But if we were able to come up with a definition that said that would be okay, but distilled wine, which is Thunderbird or Mad Dog 2020, would not be. There's a distinction between those two. Doesn't that solve your problem?
Okay, I'm going to have to answer it in a way probably you don't want to hear. Is the containers and the alcohol content of, let's say, some microbrews and some fine wines are included in this package? And
but they
yet,
wouldn't be if we amended. If we amended,
if you amend it, it's very hard to do because it even includes 16-ounce six-packs of Budweiser. I mean, the most mainstream, the most selling beverage in all of Oregon.
I guess I'm focused on the wine part, so I'm asking you about the wine.
But there's a lot of beers also that
about
are
the wine part.
Fine beers.
Does it solve the wine part if we?
If there's a way to do it,
okay,
sure, but. Like you said, one of these is 15%. I mean, what are you going to do? And the varietals, they all change. I just want it to be fair. I want it to be fair all across the board. I want it to be fair to store owners who we really try hard. We don't sell to street drinkers. We ask them questions. I said 20 years ago, train the clerks, and nobody listened. And I'm telling you, if you would have these clerks have a license and train them, you would see half the problems.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sorry.
Thank you. That was helpful.
Sir.
Hello. Rob Wheaton, Oregon AFSCME, Local 88. I represent a number of social service agencies in this town as their union representative, including Hooper Detox and Sobering Cheers, as well as Transition Projects Incorporated. I'd like to thank the City Council for acknowledging this serious and increasing problem of alcoholism and homelessness on our streets. We're not here to come take a stand up for or against this measure. However, we would like to take this opportunity to remind the Council and the community that alcoholism street drinkers usually suffer from two things, alcoholism, a physical addiction to alcohol, and homelessness. As you're aware, there's been an annual funding standoff with who's responsible for actually funding Cheers and Sobering between yourselves and the county. It's been going on for some years. Over the last couple of years, the hospitals kicked in an additional $300,000, which expired this year. Currently, the Sobering facility and Cheers program is operating at $150,000 below their budget. And despite the increasing problem over the last few years of alcoholism, their funding has remained flat. Therefore, what we're seeing is the employees of the Hooper facility doing more with less. Meanwhile, at the new detoxification facility, we have seen the increase of people waiting in the lobby go from 15 to upwards of 50 to 70 people seeking to get help and detox from their alcohol problem and having to be turned away, waiting for up to 7 to 10 days is what I've been told by the employees there. I guess what our point is that a meaningful solution, and this may help address some of the new inconveniences of alcoholism, but a meaningful solution is going to require some commitment to treatment and care. We're concerned that, you know, this under a best case scenario, this may disperse the alcoholics to other areas of the town where they're not going to be as likely to run into police and Cheers, as they're not going to be as likely to be referred to help like the Hooper Detox facility. And it's not really going to do anything to address the underlying social concern of our city. Under a worst-case scenario, instead of having people drunk on the streets, we're going to have them detoxing in front of these buildings and businesses. And we'd rather see them detoxing in a clinical facility. So our point here is to say, keep in mind that this is a serious problem that we face. It's not going to be addressed by prohibition.
Thank you, Rob, for bringing us back to the big picture. It is important to note that this is one measure that we believe can be a piece of the puzzle. It's by no means the only piece, and it includes both social services and also work at the legislature and indeed with the OLCC to address a number of different issues in a number of different ways. So thank you very much, all of you, for coming down here. And Mr. Peterson, thank you very much for participating in the Vibrant effort. That was very helpful.
So next three.
Elvis Argueta, Marvin Mitchell, Barry Joe Stahl. They'll be followed by Kathy Jacoy, Lisa Stevens, and Chris Gerard.
Good evening. Welcome to the City Council. Go ahead and begin.
Mayor, Council, I'm a member of Local 88, AFSCME. I also work at Transition Projects. I work on the line. I am here personally against this measure. I think we don't realize that a lot of the clients that are homeless at the end of the month, it's Social Security time. You might ban malt liquor, but if they have the money at the end of the month, you're going to see it rise up and down, up and down. And I understand what the police officer was saying, 116 or 161. That's cool, but I think also that if a police officer hears on the radio there's a robbery, I would suggest that the police officer stop with the drinking and head over to the emergency. I know that creates a lot of paperwork, but it's illegal, and we understand that they have to take care of that. As far as Portland Police or Portland Patrol, I see them all the time, as well as Clean and Safe. They do a great job. A lot of them direct them to social services. I mean, that's it. If what you're trying to slow down is having people drinking in the streets, why not attack the real problem, which is alcoholism? Because more than likely, it'll just disperse. And as Rob's mentioned before, it'll probably disperse to a place where they're less likely to get help. Because you see someone who walks down the street who's drunk, you're like, oh, they're just going to continue walking down the street. In this situation, I mean, it's going to be a hard call. I just don't agree with putting one rule here in the city and not putting in the other part. Now, the other thing that we didn't think about is also how we didn't delineate in the graphs versus daytime calls of alcoholism and nighttime calls. Because downtown Portland, Old Town, Chinatown, is full of clubs. And they get ruckus, walk out, and do the same thing. It's very important that we realize that it isn't just the Burnside area. I mean, it's the Northwest 23rd. The only reason that we don't get more calls there is because they probably have security at those bars. So if they get out of hand, you know, security takes over it. As far as neighborhood involvement, I wasn't involved. I get more tweets from the mayor than I do from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. I mean, that's just it.
I don't tweet, sorry.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm going to take that as a compliment.
It is a compliment. That's what I'm saying. Like, I get a lot of information.
Or cry for help, Sam.
The quarter of the week will be, I don't tweet, sorry.
That's right.
But, you know, putting a duct tape on something that's a much bigger problem is not the solution. I think it's more of an underlying current. It'll just move somewhere else and not help what's underlying. Because I see this every day. I'm a line person. So you might swipe the malt liquor, the camo, or what have you, but as soon as they get that cash or they come into other cash, it's going to be, oh, I'm getting the small brewery. I'm getting Widmere today. And you're going to see that there. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. If I missed your name. Could you say it for me again?
Elvis.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You only have to say that once.
Barry?
No, sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm Marvin Mitchell. Thank you for this opportunity, Mayor Adams and council members. I am one of the directors of Julie Westhouse, a community center for low-income and homeless residents of downtown Portland. We're at 13th and Alder. We're on the street. We open at 6:30 each morning, Monday through Saturday. We see 200 to 300 guests each day. We work hard to provide a civil, safe, and supportive place, offering hospitality and opportunity for positive change. We have expectations of our guests. We support policies that focus on our guests and their potentials rather than policies that exploit them based on their addictions or circumstances. There are many reasons we support this alcohol impact area petition. Here's just three of them. Many of our guests are in recovery. They are fragile, and exposure to others who are under the influence can sabotage their success. Observation of drunkenness, association with intoxicated people, seeing them passing by, and easy access to alcohol beverages all negatively impact people trying to make a positive change in their life. Public drunkenness is a problem partly because of easy access to high alcohol content beverages and single can sales. We work hard at being good neighbors. Our guests understand that we must be good neighbors so we can continue to be here for them. We get blamed for every unsavory act perpetrated in our part of town because we provide a community for homeless low-income people, a place to be a refuge from the street. But anything that goes wrong, they say it's those homeless bums from Julia West. That's not true. Very seldom is it one of our guests. We know the people that are causing the problems, and usually they've been denied services because of their intoxication or abusive behavior. Low-income or no-income residents should be able to buy a 40-ounce bottle each day to take back to their room to drink, right? What's wrong with that? Social and physical isolation is a major problem for many of our downtown residents, whether they're housed or homeless. Do we really want to promote a policy that encourages and enables our most vulnerable residents to withdraw and deepen their alienation? Or do we want to promote policies that engage them in ways that provide a richer life experience and help them stay stably housed? We often witness the results of people who maintain a pattern of drinking. We notice the deterioration of appearance and self-respect in those individuals from month to month. Many of these stories involve multiple ambulance calls, emergency room visits, and a lonely death. That's expensive for all of us. It's very costly to us. We rejoice when one of our friends work to kick themselves free from addictions. Allowing sale of high alcohol content beverages, drinks with more kick for the buck compounds the problems that exist with chronic drinking. It's not freedom of choice or protection of individual liberties. It's what we call dangerous compassion. That's enabling or encouraging people to maintain unhealthy lifestyles because we don't want to get involved or don't want to set boundaries. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Barry.
Hi there. I was going to start by saying, are you out of your minds? But instead, I'm going to start by saying, are you drunk? One of the things that when we say somebody's intoxicated is we're recognizing that they're not right. They're simply not right. That's why we have laws against driving while intoxicated. You know, I'm a do-gooder, and we were doing the free coffee service or soapbox under the bridge at the Baldock rest area on I-5, Baldock rest area on I-5 south of Portland. And we were doing that to draw attention to the fact that we know as a society that people have to have rest as a part of the human condition. And I wanted to just address one of the comments about the behavior of some of the people in the park. It says, I wrote this down, I quote, utilizing a safety rest area allows drivers to return to the highway rested and more alert. The effects of driving without adequate rest can impair a driver's judgment and reactions, much like driving while intoxicated. And the results of drowsy driving can be just as deadly. Yes, we do have a problem with housing in this city. I'm one of the 4,000 people sleeping outside. I'm sorry I missed my September 1st appearance. I was actually arrested as the protected party. The person that violated the restraining order that I had against him was let go. So I have a notice of tort claim against the city, and when you give me some money, I'll probably set up a 13.7% alcohol distribution system right in your alcohol impact zone, which is really a playground for the rich impact area. We know that sidewalk cafes serve alcohol. They're street drinkers, but they're rich. And they can go in the hotel and they can throw up and the maid will clean it up and then you won't have a problem. It's a homeless person that makes the mess. And I agree with the Portland police that we do need to have a cleaner, safer, and more enjoyable city. And I would like to address the chronic criminal behavior that landlords get away with here as a matter of routine. Police Commissioner, I really would like you to enforce the criminal misconduct that I've brought to your attention through your office. The judges down here at the Multnomah County Circuit Court, a very famous drunk, was one that I overturned with Stahl versus Hoke, my Supreme Court case, giving rise to the joke, what do you say to a lawyer when he shows up in court first thing in the morning drunk? Good morning, Your Honor. Well, when I came to Portland, you could drink in the parks legally. And the last time I served alcohol was in a Portland park, and that was a fundraiser for the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. So we're just talking about responsible behavior. And I think when you start to hold the rich people, like the Indigo doesn't pay for their A-board permit, that's $135. It could go to the Hooper. There we go. Kristen Yates from the Volunteers of America was responding to my inquiries about the Elliott Neighborhood Association. I founded Free Camp David W. Crowther, the one that the gentleman spoke about being closed. And she said that homelessness leads to alcoholism and drug addiction. It's a housing crisis.
Thanks, Barry. Could you call the next three?
Katie Jacoy, Lisa Stevens, and Chris Gerard. They'll be followed by David Owens, Richard Kosan, and Dan Lender, I believe is the last name.
Hi, welcome to the City Council.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. Who would like to begin?
Okay. I'll start, if that's okay.
Sure.
Good evening. My name is Katie Jacoy, and I am Western Counsel for the California Wine Institute. Mr. Mayor, commissioners, thank you for the time tonight to speak to your proposal on the AIA. The Wine Institute represents 914 California wineries, and we're here in opposition to this proposal because it bans such large categories of wine. Banning these products that many have not been shown to have any correlation to the problem. And so a lot of you've talked a lot about Washington this evening, and I'm actually from Tacoma, Washington. I'm based up there. So I have been working with the Liquor Control Board up there through the start of the AIA process in Tacoma, first with the Washington Wine Institute and then with the California group. And what we've seen, the important part that I think is missing tonight so far, is that what Washington focused on, it was product-specific bans because they wanted to show that there was a correlation between the product and the problem. And what happens when you decide to ban whole categories of products is that you have a lot of unintended consequences in that. And what we've seen with this proposal with the Oregon Wine Association, we've looked at the local Safeway that's within your AIA, and there's 160 wine products, that's the minimum, that would be banned under the category of above 14% alcohol. And I made a stop today because I got down a little bit early, and there's 44 box wines that would also be banned under this proposal. And these are products that, in our mind, from what the staff has put together as the presentation, they're isn't documentation to prove that all of those 200-plus products have any impact on the problems that you're seeing in your downtown core. So we would suggest that you take a look again. I know that the product-by-product specific ban in Washington, it may take more work to get there, but what they've seen is in all of, there's six mandatory AIAs and only eight wine products altogether have been banned in the state of Washington. And so in comparison to the almost 200 that you would be looking at under this proposal, there's only eight, and all of those products are wine products that were fortified with spirits. There's two AIAs in Tacoma, three in Seattle, and one in Spokane that all have been recognized by the Liquor Control Board up in Washington. Spokane found no wine products to be a problem, so they didn't ban any. Seattle has a list of eight that are banned in all three, and Tacoma has a list of five. So we would encourage you to go back and take a look and really think about the fact that these are legal alcohol beverage products that are being sold in the state. And it's a big and serious step to be banning legal products. And so we think there should be a correlation shown between the product and the problem. And I just want to make a couple comments. We talked about the Vancouver AIA, which is actually a voluntary effort. It was not an AIA that's been recognized by the Liquor Control Board. It's 100% compliance with the retailers, and again, it's product by product restrictions.
Is it Jacoy?
It's Jacoy.
Jacoy, excuse me. You heard the discussion that Commissioner Leonard and I had with prior people testifying. If we didn't go the route that you are proposing, and instead we tried to draw another distinction to cover the 160 wines that you've identified. Would that distinction between naturally fermenting and fortified get at the most of the concerns that you have?
No, because fortified wines include ports and sherries, Madeiras, vermouth, a lot of products made both in California wineries and products that aren't being consumed on the streets. And that's the problem. I mean, anytime, even if you carve it out and you make a little bit smaller category, you still end up affecting legal products that have no impact on the problem that you're seeing in your area. And you're also with the bag-in-the-box wines. Even though I think the staff presentation said that there were most of the problems with bag in the box were between 13.5 and 14% alcohol volume. My very informal visit to Safeway today, half of the bag in the box products are lower than 13%. So again, you've got a large category where you're talking about where wine is 10 to 11% of the problem, and you're looking at banning a significant number of products under those.
Can I follow up on that? So I heard you testify that there were 8 wine products that were banned in Washington, and you made the point that those 8 wines were all fortified with spirits.
Correct.
I heard that right. So when Commissioner Fish asked you if we could draw a distinction between fortified wines and naturally fermented wines, you said no, because that also included products such as port, sherry, Madeira, vermouth.
Correct.
So if we were to identify... So I'm trying to help you here.
I understand it,
Let me finish.
Okay, I'm
please.
Sorry, Commissioner.
I'm really trying to help you. I'm having a hard time helping people tonight. I want you to really listen to what I'm saying, because I'm trying to address the concern that you're articulating. So if we were able to draw a distinction that included those 8 wines that you mm-hmm. described in Washington, which I assume are products like Mad Dog 2020, Thunderbird, et cetera, that are what we think of as the cheap fortified wines, we're able to identify those 8 by definition, by identifying them as fortified wines, but exclude the fortified wines that you're concerned would be too all-encompassing, which would include port, sherry, Madeira, and vermouth. Does that address your concern?
Not completely, but thank you. Anytime you're going to narrow that category further, you're going to cut down on the unintended products. Washington identified those 8 because they were the problems. They were the products that were being consumed by the chronic inebriates. And so, what I'm trying to explain is that what I think you don't need to take the products from Washington. They may be some of the products in your district as well, but you need to be identifying the products that are being drunk by the chronic inebriates and that are causing the illegal activity here. And that might be specific to your district in Portland, and that will be different than what's seen in Washington. Because if you took Spokane all on its own, they didn't identify any wine products.
So you would just assume us not adopt the amendment that I'm suggesting at all?
I would encourage you not to adopt the proposal in this form at all. I think you need to go to a product-by-product look and identify those products that really are the problem here.
No, there's no clapping in this chamber.
So we'll leave it just the way it is, and you'd be happy?
Well, I would hope not. No, I wouldn't encourage you to leave it the way it is. But by then putting another category on, and it's the methodology that I think is the issue here. And so
sometimes half a loaf is better than no loaf.
I understand that, Mr.
So
Mayor.
So we've heard your response. I'm going to move us along. Hi.
Good evening, Mayor Adams, City Commissioners. I have a prop. May I use that at some point during my...
As long as you don't throw it at anyone.
No, thank you.
Or it doesn't explode.
Or drink it in public. My name is Lisa Stevens. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Wine Growers Association and the Oregon wine industry. While we regret that we were not part of the process leading up to the development of the proposal, we appreciate tonight's opportunity to comment. The Oregon wine industry is comprised of more than 400 wineries located throughout the state that produce a wide range of high-quality wines, including Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Zinfandel, Pinot Gris, to name a few. And the majority of our wines are sold right here in Oregon. While the Oregon wine industry supports the objectives of the proposed AIA and efforts to improve livability, we have serious concerns that the proposal before you this evening is too far-reaching and will have the effect of preventing law-abiding citizens from accessing quality wines. Our greatest concern is with the proposal's recommendation to ban the sale of wine with over 14% alcohol by volume, or ABV. The city staff report and proposal dated July 2010 states that very few wines are over 14%
unless they are fortified wines. And this is simply not true, as Katie mentioned. We did a survey last week at the Safeway on Southwest Jefferson and revealed that more than 160 labels and at least 8 varietals, many from Oregon, several from California, and international locations, and they all had more than 14% ABV. In Oregon, the majority of soon-to-be-released 2009 Pinot Noirs will have ABVs over 14% because of a very warm harvest year. Right now, if I were a resident of the very lovely new museum place located across the street from the Safeway and I wanted to enjoy this bottle of 2007 Sokol Blosser Oregon Pinot Noir that I purchased at Safeway last night, if the ban were in place, I would not be able to get it because it's 14.5% ABV. The Safeway serves as a valuable resource to downtown residents and workers who prefer to shop close to where they live and where they work. It does so in the same way that Fred Meyer, located on West Burnside, which is also in the proposed AIA, serves as an anchor store for residents of Northwest Portland and the West Hills. As the city seeks to establish an AIA, we urge you to establish parameters that target the problem of chronic public inebriation without casting a wide net over products. They're not the root cause of the problem. I believe it's in the ONI report that says that 90% of the incidents do not involve wine. It would be short-sighted to create an AIA that would serve as a model to be imported to other municipalities with ever-widening negative impacts to the wine industry and its consumers with little or no return on the objective. We would suggest you consider one of two alternative proposals. First and foremost, exclude wine from the Portland AIA ban. Second, consider a targeted AIA regime that's similar to the ones adopted in Washington state that bans products that have been clearly identified as the source of the problem. I will provide a written testimony and attach a list of those products from Seattle and Tacoma. We are interested in working with the city towards a reasonable solution, one that does no harm to an industry, the Oregon wine industry, that is a valuable contributor to the economy and whose products are enjoyed legally and safely by residents throughout the city. I thank you for tonight's opportunity to comment.
So may I ask the question that Commissioner Leonard would ask if he wasn't just stepped out? Would exempting naturally fermented wines take care of most of your issues?
I know that some of this process has been an education about wine in itself and working with the staff over the last week. For fortified wines, which are produced in Oregon, some port-style wines and some vermouths are produced here. So we obviously would not be happy with a broad ban on those wines. There's also, you know, we're also talking about those very nice high-quality, high-end wines, sherry, Madeira, that would be caught up in that kind of ban. One of the problems with using the term fortified is that the federal government does not allow you to actually identify wine.
I wasn't proposing that. I was saying, what about naturally fermented? That's a problem?
I know that we're not allowed to use the word fortified. I don't know that naturally fermented appears on labels that would make it easy to identify that on a product.
Thank you. I do want to pick up on your comment. I've learned more about alcohol in the last 6 months than I ever thought possible.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sir.
Good evening, Mayor Adams, Commissioners. My name is Chris Girard, and I'm President and CEO of Plaid Pantries, Inc. You received my written testimony in advance, so I won't take up time on that, but I'd like to summarize a couple of key points. I've actually been involved with helping whatever to find solutions for Portland's street drinking problems for over 20 years now. We've tried a patchwork of city alcohol impact areas, good neighbor plans, some older community policing agreements that we still abide by the way. We also have a hodgepodge of inconsistent restrictions placed at various times by OLCC on some licensees, but not others in the same area. And I'm not being critical of OLCC, just pointing out the result of not having a comprehensive uniform policy for all licensees. Most of these efforts work to some degree for some period of time in some of the areas. I believe we do need a more comprehensive solution, and we support getting rid of cheap, high alcohol content beverages, which should be the test, in the downtown Portland area. Unfortunately, the current proposal will not do the job. The impact area isn't large enough. By staff's own analysis, it's obvious that we need to take in the full northwest area of the inner downtown. We need to pick up a handful of licensees just south of the I-405, and we need to go across the river connecting to the actual city-designated AIAs that are over there. I don't know if they're still on the books, but they were designated as AIAs. We need at least the full eastern one right across Burnside Bridge and at least the southern portion of that big northern AIA. There's a much higher probability that a voluntary program will work if all licensees have uniform restrictions without any licensee having a competitive advantage over another, which is what the problem was with the Vibrant PDX proposal. Now we've moved that boundary. The licensees have changed, but the same issues come up unless we grab that really small number percentage-wise of the remaining licensees. The Seattle AIA is frequently cited as an example of what works. We have stores in Seattle. We also are a voluntary participant in the Vancouver AIA as well. So I agree that it works. But what's proposed here is not the Seattle AIA. We do need to have product-specific restrictions, not broad package size restrictions that capture products not preferred by street drinkers and not documented as required by the rule is contributing to street drinking. Current proposal bans a large portion of the beverage category that's popular among our non-offending customers. Finally, I was going to testify there appears to be some misunderstanding about the rule, but it looks like the rule has been researched. And I just don't think it's time to turn it over to the OLCC to decide where the boundaries are and what the restrictions are. I think we can still work on this. If it doesn't work, another voluntary, expand it and have a voluntary attempt, then let's go get an AIA, let's put it together properly, let's make it bigger. And I think you'll go to the commission with a larger consensus of licensees saying, okay, it's time to do it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all. Appreciate it. Sue, how many more do we have?
We have four more. And that would be David Owens, Richard Cosan, Dan, last name begins with L, and then will be Damas Abadan.
Who would like to start?
I'm Dan with the last name that begins with L. my name is Dan Lenzen. I'm a principal with Foresight Development, and it's a property ownership and management company and Concept Entertainment. Also an owner of seven on-premise liquor licenses, all in the Portland area, different than what we're talking about with the package stores. As an on-premise liquor licensee, we employ approximately about 200 people within this proposed area. And we have approximately about 40,000 square feet of retail space, most of it in Old Town. We are sensitive to this issue and resource allocation issues related to this AIA that it's attempting to affect, and that this AIA is attempting to address issues not specific to an on-premise liquor license. We as licensees oppose the formation of the AIA. We're concerned this alcohol impact area, if put into place, will affect potential for business. AIAs are theoretical in Oregon, as there are none in place with the Oregon Liquor Commission. Once put into place, this could be a convenient vehicle to expand enforcement in a blanket method to a geographical area that is static and could be in place for many years. What that could mean to our business world is that this AIA, if it were to be expanded beyond its well-intentioned genesis, could affect existing good operators and anyone else who would like to have a business within this AIA. For that business staffing reason, we'd recommend city staff and Portland police continue looking for other methods to resolve the incidents and issues this proposed AIA intends to address.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor Adams and council members. My name is Richard Cosasan, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Neighborhood Store Association, which primarily represents the interests of small, independently owned convenience stores throughout the state. For your information, and I hope you had a chance to review, we submitted formal written comments early this afternoon. I was instructed by one council member. That might be a little bit late, but that was the timing. Thank you, Mr. Leonard. In our previous comments, I think we centered on a couple of concepts. One, the uniformity and uniformity of limitations established through alcohol impact area. The petition speaks to, I think, some situations that do not provide that uniformity. And in accordance with the current administrative rules, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, I think, has but one function, and that is to, if they affirmatively accept a petition, to set uniform limitations in the given setting. So I would encourage a further review of those limitations and whether they meet the uniformity requirements contained in the current administrative rules. The primary example we talk about found in the petition could be viewed as the restriction on malt beverages. We primarily select out those small breweries which are identified as, quote, small breweries under the Federal Tax Act. And I think you have a very strong dichotomy between one and two there, again, conflicting with the uniformity requirements. Further, I think the bottom line is, in light of potential problems with the petition, we would strongly encourage the council to take a look at the petition, take a look at the current administrative rules to see if they are in compliance with such rules, and again, center on the uniformity standards that are required by the rule. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, City Council. My name is David Owens. I am a resident of Old Town. And just for starters, as a Portlander, I'm philosophically opposed to the concept of a state-run AIA simply because, with all due respect, we pay the five of you to run our government, administer our laws. Abdicating that duty to some representative from Klamath Falls at the state level for oversight is just abandonment of your duty. As far as the beverages in question, Sparks malt beverage is three times as expensive as Potter's vodka on an alcohol-accounts-by-alcohol-accounts basis. The state-run liquor stores are not part of this plan, so very simply banning the stuff could just shift it to other products rather easily. If we actually do manage to write a definition that excludes the products favored by street drinkers, two cans of Sparks beverage, about the same cost as one dose of heroin. And trust me, I live in Old Town, and there's a lot of it. If it goes from alcohol, it's just going to go to another drug. Fortunately for me, this law doesn't really apply to me. I'm not exactly rich, but I can afford to take a taxi outside of Old Town and shop in the area outside the AIA. I can afford to drink at a table at a street-side cafe rather than drinking sitting on the sidewalk 10 feet away in an illegal fashion. And I don't like Budweiser. It tastes like crap. This plan, I believe, is ill-formed as a general concept. Just sending it to the state level is wrong. Singling out specific beverages is wrong. And this is clearly class-based. I'm of a socioeconomic class that really would not feel the effect of this law at all, middle class. People one step below me, my next-door neighbors on the economic ladder, will be the ones impacted by this. They won't be able to go to a convenience store, buy a bottle, and take it home. And yes, I do realize many of these people have problems, but they're not, that's their problems. We can't force people to change their behavior. Society's been trying for a long time. They've never succeeded. And that's my basic point.
So what should we be doing that we're not?
Targeted law enforcement really is the best option for most of these kinds of issues. And, yeah, I realize that means
but
money.
Law enforcement says they need this.
I was a cop for 6.5 years, and I can tell you that they're probably right on a lot of ways, but in general, the police should not be writing the laws. It's their job to I probably totally misstated that. I don't really think this will have much of an effect, and I believe that the statistics are simply the before picture, and after picture would be drastically different, and everyone would still be, shooting up on the streets or smoking meth on the streets. We have massive widespread problems with that. I don't think banning 16-ounce Budweiser Tallboys is really going to change that.
Appreciate your testimony. Thank you very much. Thank you all. Is that it?
And now we have two more, Damus Abadan and Joe Gilliam.
It can be anyone but Joe Gilliam.
Oh, dear God.
He waits to the very end. Hi, welcome back to City Council.
Hopefully you're not related to Vic Gilliam, because that would send us over the...
Name is Damus Abadan, a resident of Lower Southeast Portland. Thank you for having me today and hearing me out. On what grounds do members of the council, Portland Police Bureau, the Portland Business Alliance, and some downtown residents think that banning sales of alcohol above a certain content in downtown will lead to less public drunkenness? Now, stating for example, it's been known for a long time now that smokers who smoke low nicotine cigarettes tend to drag on the cigarettes more intensely, thus smoking more cigarettes and absorbing more nicotine and thus worsening their addiction. Wouldn't a prohibition on high content alcohol simply result in people with drinking problems in particular relying more heavily on regular booze and a lot more of it? Also, wouldn't the so-called street drunks the council and others seem so concerned about simply hop on the max, which, yes, does cost money, but as far as some people are concerned, is free, and otherwise would head over to the nearest corner stores just on the other side of the Willamette and buy whatever they want there. They would either stay in that area, and then which would mean not solving, but rather shoving the problem outside of downtown, or they could return here, which would mean that such a ban would be proven to be ineffective. Also, why does this ban not do anything to address the intoxicated crowds pouring out of bars and nightclubs on the weekends? I have no studies or evidence to prove this, of course. This is just my own observation as an occasional downtown reveler as well. But I do suspect that most alcohol-related crime in downtown can be traced back to this source. Not with homeless people who might drink periodically throughout the day. So if this issue really is about public drunkenness, then why not start by curtailing drunken bar hoppers and club goers? Lastly, I suspect that the vast majority of sales of high-content alcohol in downtown are from residents and sometimes students who go to school in downtown. This, I'm guessing, to be due to the fact that people who live downtown typically have more of a disposable income than people who are homeless. Also, the officer earlier, and my apologies for not remembering his name, suggested that downtown's high density of stores that sell such alcohol actually draws people in from other parts of the city. Where they might, and from other areas where they might not otherwise be available. I contend that high alcohol beer and wine indeed may be easily available in many stores all over the city, including just in the inner southeast and in many stores, including many grocery stores, Safeways, of Plaid Pantries, Fred Meyer's, and Kurt, including, easily accessible by the max.
So I need you to wrap up.
Just for the record, one last thing. Mike's Harder Lemonade is only 8.0% alcohol, not 8.1%. I should know I happen to be quite a fan of Mike's Harder.
Let the record be corrected. Mr. Gilliam, it is indeed an honor to have you in our chambers.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Joe Gilliam. I represent the Northwest Grocery Association. I'm also the very much younger brother and Representative Vic Gilliam, so I want that on the record.
And better looking, can I?
Well, thank you so much for that comment. I hope my mom is listening.
Pandering.
I don't envy your situation here. I thank you. You know, you got a full docket of and an expanse of people who have illustrated the problems. I mean, from prohibition not having an effect to you got to do something to clean up the streets and solve this problem. So I envy you. I think the only issue you have omitted and have not heard tonight, that if you do ban the bladder in a box wine, you'll put half the dudes on Match.com out of business and I think you'll hear from them shortly. These are the jokes.
Half the dudes.
But in all seriousness, I think I'm here to tell you that for the grocers that are in the AIA, and you know, you're always going to have the problem of who's across the street. There's just no question. But for the Fred Meyers and Safeway that I represent that are in here, that they could live with the definition of on fortified wine if there was a caveat put in there to talk about distilled spirits, the fortified, and leave the fermented wines alone. And then take the route instead of brand name, which there have been problems in the past in that, and go through a definition of the things that really aren't the problem, more by type. Things like port, sherry, Madeira, Marsala, and vermouth, which have been mentioned a couple times. If that language was in there, then we would support it. We realize it's not going to solve all the problems. It's, you know, there's too many problems to solve, but we think it'd be the step in the right direction if the council is inclined to go ahead with an AIA. The only thing I would ask is that in a couple years or over time, if you find the AIA is not having the impact, is also come back to say, okay, we tried this, let's repeal it, let's try something else. I don't think there's any silver bullet here, but we want to get on board with those caveats, and if you take that suggestion, we would be able to support it.
So can I ask you about the fortified wine? Because the previous testifier I just came in at the tail end of said that there was some prohibition against using the word fortified wine. Are you familiar with that?
I think I stepped out as that was being said. I'm not familiar with any federal law that says that, so we'd have to ask counsel. I haven't heard that before.
I think the conversation was around labeling, and that if it's not required federally by labeling, it would be hard for anybody to figure out what's what. Is that accurate?
But if we said something to the effect that we would not allow the sale of fortified wine over 14% ABV, and then carved in an exception for port, sherry, Madeira, Marsala, and vermouth.
We could live with that.
Okay.
In our product mix, those are things that aren't associated with the problem. Those aren't things that people are buying to drink on the street, and would not be, I mean, very unpleasant to drink on their own. They're more for cooking and such. But we do sell them in the stores inside the AIA, and are a popular item, particularly at the Safeway store at 10th and Alder.
And to be clear, a number of the Oregon vineyards sell wine, as we saw demonstrated here tonight, that ferments naturally above 14%.
Commissioner Leonard, yes. And I think the distinction there, too, and it's a very good point that was brought up by one of the ladies over here as a convenience store, you know, on the fermented wine varietal could change year to year, 13.8 to 14.2 or whatever, where the fortified is a formula.
Right.
It's a distilled and mixed drink, so...
And they achieved the fortified wine by the addition of, as I understand, distilled spirits. So it isn't something that occurs naturally.
Within the parameters of the OLCC, but there's a certain amount of that that's allowed in there for flavoring or anything else. But that is more of a controlled, you're mixing a distilled spirit with something so you can control.
I see.
Versus nature taking its course and fermenting in the bottle.
So if we exempted naturally fermented wines, period, and those specific types, the port, sherry, whatever, would that get to it?
As Commissioner Leonard stated, yes, we would.
Commissioner Fritz is suggesting saying it a different way. Instead of saying
fortified,
using the term fortified, we'd just use the term naturally fermented. Would that, by definition, exclude fortified wines?
Honestly, I don't know if it would. I think the fortified definition, as you stated, would be more to the point for us. And I just don't. I don't know if the other way would work. I'd have to go and really ask some of our wine buyers to see if that works.
And in any effect, what we're recommending to the OLCC gives them our intent of what we want to have done. It isn't the precise rule as it would be promulgated by them ultimately, correct? So wouldn't they wordsmith it to make sure?
If the OLCC found the wordsmith and it was equivalent to that, we wouldn't have a problem with it.
Can I just because I'm not familiar with the OLCV process, if we have a recommendation to the OLCV,
and
they do some rulemaking, they would have a public hearing and give people a chance to weigh in on that at their level, wouldn't they?
Commissioner Fish, I believe they would have to do that in any process at the OLCC. I don't know, because we've never really been through a full AIA process. I really don't know what their latitude is in amending it at the OLCC level.
Well, I think that...
I mean, the commission has overall power to do...
They can do whatever they,
whatever they want. So, but I'm not an expert in the process.
Does the process permit anyone who thinks that our definition is overbroad or ambiguous or whatever, less than clear in terms of what's covered, does it give someone a chance to participate in that process and sharpen our language?
I believe it does. I believe they have the authority to amend and sharpen anything they want to because of their authority.
So we will, as part of our legislative intent, legislative actions, we will be sending Commissioner Fritz and her team with our recommendations so that we can